I understand you arrived here on Yorick Bernison's back.
New King of the Bears. I believe you preferred the old one, but you should be happy now you're free.
How does a little girl acquire the King of the Panzerbjorn as a guardian?
It's been quite a journey to get here.
Welcome to Kinfolk Lore, a podcast where we explore fictional worlds that bring people together. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul, and we're cousins who love to talk about world building in sci-fi and fantasy. We hope that over time, through our shared love of our favorite stories, we all become family on this podcast journey.
For our first season, we are discussing His Dark Materials, the HBO BBC television show. Today, we're going to go through the episode and talk about our reflections on this world. So if you haven't watched His Dark Materials episode 8, Betrayal, please stop, watch it, and come back when you finish.
In addition, we will be discussing adult themes and topics on this podcast. So please say goodbye to the kids. Make sure they got their toothbrush and everything they need. It's the least you could do. This is episode 8.
Over a PA system, Father MacPhail tells the Magisterium troops to ready for battle, while Mrs. Coulter loads her own gun in preparation. I don't know why she's preparing with a gun, but
Colty,
you know,
is strapped. She's ready. She's good to go. She is going to bust a cap in that ass. Let's go.
In his lab, Azrael and Stelmario are contemplating their next move. Stelmario tells Azrael that the Aurora is strong and the child is here. She tells them it is time. And can I just say, Stelmario is still the creepiest demon on the show. When she says, it is time, I was like, okay. I was shook. time for what?
Time for, exactly, that deepness in her voice. It's like super deep. It's like, you know, and then she's like hitting you with the child is here. And you're like, well, what do they need the child for? This is, yeah, scary stuff from Stelmario. Not a good look. How could she be scarier than a snake, than Tiny Nagini? And he doesn't even speak.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know how I feel about the snake. And I was thinking about this. And I still think the snake is like super creepy, but she's definitely, she just seems more evil. The snake is kind of just chilling most of the time.
Yeah, she's sinister. That's what it is. She's more sinister. Yeah.
Exactly. She's definitely more sinister. So Lyra visits her father in his lab. He wonders how she came to be there and acquired Yorick as an ally. He takes this moment to be extremely petty.
King petty. King.
So petty. And remind Lyra that, yet again, he never sent for her. Ugh. Lyra demands to know why he lied about being her father, saying that she would have been proud. I don't know why. Like, at this point, I feel like Lyra knows that he's trash.
Let's just establish that he's trash, and she is just holding on to this little feather of a dream.
I would have been so proud. Why, Lyra? Why?
I don't get it. I don't understand. Yeah, failure as a man, failure as a father.
Best description in the show, full stop.
100%.
So they joke about Mrs. Coulter, and then Azrael says very abruptly he doesn't want to continue this conversation because it's getting too sentimental. In anger, Lyra informs him that her new name is now Lyra Silvertongue.
And then he has the nerve to be like, you don't want my name?
You don't want my name?
No, she doesn't want your name. Like, because at least, like she says, the person that gave it to her actually loves her. Like, yeah, for sure. Trash. Straight trash.
Literally nobody wants your name, Azrael. Like, nobody. Like, Mrs. Coulter doesn't want your name. Your daughter doesn't want your name. Your name is garbage.
Stelmario's debating it. She's like, you know, I'm kind of running the show around here. I don't know.
So she tries to give him the alethiometer, and he refuses it, saying that he doesn't need it. Not that he doesn't want it, but that he doesn't need it. In the next scene, we're on the Magisterium's airship, and Father MacPhail visits Mrs. Coulter, and he seems like he goes in there just to gloat. Like, he was a little bored, the in-flight movie was not so good. He was like, what can I do right now? I'm going to go and bother Mrs. Coulter. So she's not having
it. No, she's like, don't come for me if I don't send for you. It's it. She's like, you're weak, son. Don't be asking me no questions and run. You need something? Why are you coming in my chambers? She's not having it.
Also, how big is this airship? Her room is so big. Like, she has like an entire room here.
Yeah. And she's out, and she's obviously containing a very, very close to a nervous breakdown. Does she not like flying? What's going on? Because she is petting the monkey super, super fast and shaking and muttering. And
making weird sounds.
Yeah.
She's struggling. But, you know, Father McPhail coming into the room and trying to shame her definitely helped her pull it together.
100%.
She basically tells him that he envies her and Azrael because they have conviction and confidence.
Yeah, zero swag. You're weak, son. That's what she's saying. She's like, you are weak. You want what we got. We walk around here like we own the place. He's whack. Anyway.
He does lack a certain amount of confidence. Like, he does seem a little bit like he could take some classes or something on how to present himself better.
Yeah, definitely lacking in confidence. Definitely.
So back at the Magisterium headquarters, Boreal and Fra Pavel are discussing the alethiometer's answer to Boreal's question from a few episodes. Just as a reminder, he had asked Fra Pavel to ask the alethiometer what Grumman discovered.
You mean he asked Ratty? I know your predilections, Ratty.
So Fra Pavel's like, you know, it didn't really make a lot of sense, but basically it said that there's a knife in a tower surrounded by angels. That's what he discovered, and his son will lead you there. But that can't be right because he didn't have a son. Boreal, gleefully storms off without even a thank you. He doesn't even say, thanks, bruh, like, I appreciate the help. He's just out. Bye.
That freaking recognition of like, oh, I know something you don't know. Yeah, he does have a son. He's kind of like, he gets super quiet and kind of like, did it say son? And he's all like, did it? And he's super quiet in that moment. And you're like, wow, you see the wheel spinning. Great acting job. And Boreal definitely is like, he's ready. That's all I can say. He's ready to get back to our world super quick.
He really had like a villain's exit though, like storm away. No need to say goodbye. No need to say thank you. Just I'm out.
Yeah, for sure. Lacking in all decorum and manners. Him and Lyra. Lyra did running up on people just talking. They just no manners. Anyway.
So back at Azrael's lab, Thorod, who's Azrael's servant, asked him if Lyra has everything she needs, because once again, everyone is better at parenting Lyra than her own parents.
Yes, 100%. They're terrible.
Azrael seems completely unbothered and is much more concerned about this like greater enemy that he's mumbling about, greater than the Magisterium. Just like Azrael is very one note.
This is all he cares about. Very obsessed. He's obsessed with this whole thing. It's crazy.
So he tells Thorod that he won't be there when the Magisterium arrives, and to take care of Lyra, to keep her safe. Thorod is like, bruh, please, please say goodbye to her. That's the least that you could do. And Azrael's like, nah, I'm good.
I mean, she says she left the fought the Magisterium for him, like ran with the gypsies, enlisted the help of a freaking armored bear, like, got the help of the witches all to bring him something, and he doesn't even want that, and now he doesn't even want to say goodbye. I mean, do we need any more reasons why this guy is not the dude? Like, not my guy. I hate that guy. Sorry. I'm letting it spill out too early, but Azrael, much to be desired.
Yeah, he's particularly bad. And I mean, he's only been in two episodes of this entire show, and he's been trash in both of them. So, you know, I'm off on Azrael just like you were.
I have stayed consistent just like him. I have been a single issue candidate. I am only talking about, listen, Lyra needs emancipation as a minor. She needs to do her own thing.
Well, in the next scene, Pan is like, let's go. Lyra's taking a bath, and Pan and her are making their plans. And Pan is like, I'm really ready. I'm over Asriel. Let's pack our stuff and be out. Like, take your little bath, and we should go. Roger shows up, comes into the bathroom. He walks backwards into the bathroom to give her a little privacy. And he is deeply, deeply concerned about Azrael's behavior. He wants to understand why Azrael was so excited to see him. And he comes to the conclusion that parents are more trouble than they're worth. He says that he really liked when Lyra and he were both orphans. And if she wants, they can pretend that she still is an orphan, and they're both orphans together.
Roger 2020, he gets my vote. Like, that is a better platform than Azriel has presented or anyone else. Like, he's like, let's be orphans, screw these parents, we're going to make a run for it, because Azriel's looking at me like a chicken dinner, and I'm not sure why. I'm really not sure.
Yeah, I mean, Roger and maybe Ma Costa seem to be the only people who really understand how rough it is for Lyra, that these are her parents. And so Lyra started this season thinking that she was an orphan, and she actually gained her parents back, right? When Mrs. Coulter told her that Azriel was her father, and then she later finds out that Mrs. Coulter is her mother, and then she loses them both. It's really heartbreaking, and I think Roger's acknowledging that to her.
Definitely, definitely. It's the right feeling, right? Like, she's feeling all the right things. You know, one of the things that I reflected on in this section was that, you know, Azriel, once again, wrong with his take. I left you where you were safe. Well, she wasn't safe. Mrs. Coulter came to the Magisterium. She plucked her out of there. Mrs. Coulter came to the college, the Jordan College, and she plucks her out right out of there. The master had no real say in it. When they couldn't find her, they come and they turn over the whole entire college and, you know, intimidate them to try to see where they can find her. She was given one of the most dangerous things you could have in this world, obviously, because it can tell you the truth, and the Magisterium is trying to keep people in the dark. So kids are being snatched left and right. Roger gets snatched. So he's totally oblivious because he's so focused on the one thing that he cares about, and it has nothing to do with any of the humans. And I think, you know, Mrs. Coulter goes into it, and we'll cover it later, about what people should be feeling as far as, like, how he treats other people in his life.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Azriel's really awful. And Lyra, I still don't get the sense that Lyra feels that. She, in fairness to Lyra, I think she wants to give both of her parents the benefit of the doubt and wants to love them and wants them to love her. So I think that what Roger, what Pan, what all these people are telling her at this point is what she needs to hear. But I don't, you know, based on how she behaves in the next scene when she sees Azriel again, I don't think that she's not there yet, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely not. And, you know, I think that she does have some awareness, though, I think, which is cool, when she says, at least the person who gave me the name Silvertongue loves me. Like, she can realize that Azriel doesn't show any sort of warmth or affection, even when she makes a great, I mean, the joke that she makes at her mother's expense is hilarious, right? And they bond for like a quick moment, and he totally detaches as quickly as it happens, because he can't take it when she's like, you know, your choice in women is about as bad as your choice in bears. And I mean, they laugh, they chuckle, and then he's like, okay, we should stop talking now because I'm getting too emotional.
Yeah, Azriel doesn't want to love Lyra, yeah. Whereas Mrs. Coulter wants to love Lyra and doesn't know how.
Exactly, exactly. No, I agree. So back in our world, Boreal surveys the damage in Will's apartment. He takes this opportunity to let his remaining minion, who we're naming Not Thomas. Not Thomas.
What's his actual name? Do we know?
No one knows. I don't think it's important because he is terrible as a minion. He's about as bad at parenting, at being a minion, as those guys in the other world are at parenting. You know, he's horrible. Now he knows he messed up, and I don't see why I should get you to do anything, Boreal tells him. I give you my top computer scientist. All right, for you to go on your little raid, and you get him killed. All right, I go ahead and get him. You go in, do some grimy shit, and you get him killed. Tell me there's anything that you can do without my help. So the guy's kind of, you know, lobbying for Boreal to sell him how he'll be able to find Will, because now they know Will is super important. We find out that the other minion, not Thomas, is in fact Detective Inspector.
Which, can I just note, I was scandalized. Yes. I was like, oh! This entire season, I have been like, who is this guy even? Mm-hmm. Like, why is he the muscle? He's not good at his job.
He's terrible at his job.
Yeah, he's just Elaine there. Peeped him immediately. Like, Elaine was on to him from, like, day one. So I was like, I don't understand. Who is this guy? How did Boreal meet him? And now we find out he's the police.
And you know what? Good on Boreal for calling him out on his shit, because he's obviously a bad detective, too. Like, his stakeout skills are suspect. Like, stakeout and everyone sees you.
He's bad at everything. This guy is terrible. That's why he doesn't get a name.
That was his annual review. He was like, I can't. You're terrible. I give you my top guy, you get him killed. I tell you to do this, you don't do it. I have to come and clean up the mess. Like, he's like, you know what? You failed. Needs improvement everywhere. Across the board. Oh, man. So back in the north, Lyra and Roger have a sleepover. It's pretty cute. Roger tells Lyra she can use the alethiometer to find out what Azrael really feels and what he's up to. Roger asks her if the alethiometer knows everything that will happen to them, and Lyra says she believes it only tells her what it wants her to know. Roger says then they shouldn't use it. He reminds her that they are there because of each other, that they've been there for each other, and that they've each shown up for each other at different parts of this journey. They change each other's lives. They share a huge toast with their mugs, which is adorable.
It was okay? Super cute. Yeah, I was just like, these guys, adorable.
I love them. Later that night, when they're asleep, Azrael wakes up Lyra. Maybe he's thought about doing this thing where he like actually tells her what's going on and the whole thing. Thorman got under his skin a little bit. He tells her that he doesn't know what dust is, but that the Magisterium believes that dust is literally sin that infects the soul with evil. The Magisterium connects dust with the story of Adam and Eve and has labeled dust as original sin. He quotes the scripture about Adam and Eve saying Eve's demon settled when she ate the apple from the forbidden tree. Azrael believes this is the root of the Magisterium's control. Lyra makes the connection that Mrs. Coulter believes that by cutting away their demons, she is saving the sinless souls of the children. Azrael asks if they tried to cut Lyra's demon, and she tells him that her mother prevented it, even though they did try. He seems a bit surprised, which was pretty interesting. It was pretty cool for him to have, like, that look of shock of, like, wow, did she stop them from doing that?
Yeah, you know? He did seem genuinely surprised that Mrs. Coulter would stop it.
Yeah, and it also gives you a moment, like, right, we've been super, like, man, Mrs. Coulter, she's definitely the actual evil person in the story as well, and she's pushing, she's hurting all these children. And while that's true, it gives you another viewpoint of her motivations, that she's really thinking that she's saving people, oddly enough, in a weird, twisted way. So it was, mm-hmm. It was an interesting scene and sequence. So he tells her that the bond between human and demon is extremely powerful, and that when the bond is cut, there's an immense release of energy. He asks her what the most important questions they could ask is, and Lyra responds, where dust comes from. He explains that they can build a bridge between worlds and learn more about dust. He also tells her that dust allows the alethiometer to work through the though the Magisterium doesn't know that yet. He tells her that he's glad that she came after all, and that she is the product of something extraordinary. Which I'm not really sure. I think he's feeling himself a little bit.
I was like, what's so extraordinary?
It's like, it's Mrs. Coulter and you boned, and then they had a kid. I don't know how extraordinary that is. You know, like, Lyra falls asleep in the lab, and Azrael has, you know, some bonding time with his daughter, kind of explaining, like, dust and swapping dust stories and scripture, but not really hitting the mark of what I think his manservant was getting at all.
Yeah, I totally agree. Also, later in the episode, it becomes really clear that the whole point of this was to separate Lyra from Roger.
Yeah, it was totally a scheme because the sleepover was actually a great move for them being together, that he wouldn't be able just to snag Roger out of the bed. So yeah, he had to get her away. So that's lame on his part. And I think my take as we're at a reflections of this section is my take on it was, I guess I was pretty, I wondered how the show was going to handle this, because in more of a meta commentary, it's like the linchpin of like this whole first book, and it digs really deep into religious themes. And I wondered if they were going to do that. And it's obvious that they have the same story of Adam and Eve in this world, even though it's not our world, but that it's a little bit different because actually Eve has a demon. And one thing that came up for me was, well, is the snake Eve's demon in their world? I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it was kind of, I thought about that. And it made me, I was really surprised that the showrunners were brave enough to go there.
Yeah, I have some question about, was it wise to wait this long to get into the specifics of the religious themes? But I think that part of what they were trying to do here was hook us into the story before they got into what is a pretty controversial theme for this story. Like, yep, you know, Pullman's work is based on a lot of ideas that are anti-religion, not necessarily anti-God, but anti-religion. And they're controversial for that. There are many schools that have banned these works because of the themes. And so I think what they were trying to do was sort of like bring us into the story before they introduce the religious, what has been subtext, but isn't so much subtext in the actual books. The only thing that I guess I worry about here is that this is, I don't know, this feels very much like they tried to keep the story true to being a book, like a story that kids can watch. I had some questions about whether or not like children could follow some of these conversations about dust and literal sin and souls. And I think that like, if you grew up in an extremely religious household or you went to a religious school, the way I went to religious schools my entire life up until college, that, yeah, okay, so I can very easily understand the notion of literal sin, of the original sin, the, you know, the Adam and Eve origin stories. This story felt a little bit for me, I guess, less tangible when they started talking about this. While I think it was good and I'm glad they did it, and it was super helpful for me because I've always struggled with what dust actually represents in this story.
Yeah.
I was sitting here thinking, wow, HBO is an international company, so BBC is as well. And is everyone going to understand this? Maybe they will. But it does feel like like you need to have a real basis in Christian Judeo theology to understand what Azrael was talking about here.
And I think why is because they changed it from the text in the book. And I think in the book I, you know, read not too long ago, the first one, they actually take an exact scripture where dust is mentioned in the book, in the Bible, right? So they take the actual like scripture and they read it verbatim. And what they did here was they kind of paraphrased it and then threw in dust at the end. And then that was kind of like, oh, okay, this is how we can kind of sidestep using the exact wording to offend people. And I think that was a little bit of a risk, because I think Pullman did it that way so that it kind of tied together the whole reason why we were talking about dust from the very beginning when you use it like that instead of just paraphrasing. So it was, I know why they did it, but I did question whether, like you said, doing it so late and then doing it in that way was the best way to present it. And I also think it's part of the thing that as a whole we've talked about, is that they fast-tracked this story so much that little elements that would have made that piece more powerful are lost because they've had to fast track it to get to where they wanted to eventually get the story to at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so the next scene, we're back in our world. And Boreal is sitting in his car, as he likes to do in our world, which I'm convinced that Boreal just likes the trappings of 2019. Like, he's like, oh, they have cars that are nicer and automatic and phones. And I think that that's part of the appeal to him. So he's talking to his little disgusting snake demon, and he says, Fra Pavel said there was a tower. It must be the Tower of Angels. The legends are true. So clearly, Boreal has heard about this tower that the Alethiometer referenced. Will is traveling through town on a bus, trying to look incognito. Pro tip, Will. Wearing the hoodie, looking over your shoulder in the net is not going to keep people from looking at you. It's drawing attention. Yeah. He looks so suspicious. I'm just like, Will, come on. Yeah. Look nonchalant, bro.
He looks hella suspicious. He's like got it drawn. He's looking over his shoulder. He looks on edge. People are like, what's wrong with this kid? Like, yeah. Oh, man.
So back at Azrael's lab, Thoreau wakes up Lyra and tells her that Azrael is gone. She immediately starts to look for Roger, and Thoreau tells her that Roger has gone with Azrael. Lyra immediately understands that this means that Azrael is going to cut Roger. She gets this because, you know, she was listening when Azrael was talking about that release of energy that comes from cutting a demon away from their person. She runs outside and calls for Yurik. And Yurik answers her call pretty quick and calls up his whole squad. Whole squad. Yurik had so many bears. I was like, where did all these bears come from?
He had time to, like, overthrow the whole entire government, organize his new squad, like, relieve the freaking guards, go into hiding behind where he was, and never have any communication with the whole squad, and then all of them showed up. I'm impressed. Yurik is dope.
Please. Yeah, it was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So they immediately go to follow Azrael and Roger up the mountain towards the Aurora. Mrs. Coulter and the other Magisterium forces arrive. They make it into the lab, and she tells Father McPhail not to touch anything. She looks at the notes that Azrael and Stamaria were looking at earlier, and she also looks through the telescope at the Aurora, and she, too, is putting together the pieces. Just then, Thoreau arrives and knocks Father McPhail out.
Right to that grill piece. He took a, like, two-piece spicy right to the chin. Like, it was amazing. It was amazing.
It was so good. Mrs. Coulter is not at all shocked.
She's no.
Like, I know you're not going to hurt me.
She was calm as hell because she spent time around this person. And you know what was so great is you could tell in her response that her and Azrael really had a long-term relationship because she was at total ease with this guy. She was like, come on, Thor. Come on. You're not about this life. God, that's hilarious. It was good.
So she tries to convince Thoreau to share information with her. She invokes the name of the authority because she knows that he doesn't care about the Magisteria. And the authority in this story is basically a stand-in for God. And it's clear that Thoreau still believes in God, even though he doesn't care for the Magisterium. He kind of softens, but he doesn't really offer up any information to her. And she says that she's going to let him go. She'll take the troops to pursue Azrael, but she will give him the opportunity to escape. And this is when she basically says to him, like, Azrael doesn't deserve your loyalty. He treated everyone badly. He's not a good guy. And Thoreau doesn't deny it.
No, how could he? I mean, he had to remind his kid him to get his kid a toothbrush. Like, are you kidding me? Like, he's terrible. Like, anyway, I love this line from Mrs. Coulter because it gives you her awareness of what's happening, her awareness of what is being experienced, right? And then also, like, she's kind of, like, sized up Adriel really well, that he's selfish. Like, that he has a very selfish tendency and narcissistic and doesn't really care about the other people that have been around him as long as he's pursuing what he's going after.
Absolutely. And her and Lyra are both so quick to figure out what he's doing. I mean, this whole family is very intelligent, so it doesn't surprise me on that level, but it's like they know him so well. They never doubt that he's capable of this.
Yep. Agreed. I mean, and for good reason, especially Mrs. Coulter. She knows immediately what he's going for and what it means and what he's trying to do. And it took Lyra a little bit, but once she got it, she got it. You know what I mean?
Well, I think that's the difference between Lyra wanting to believe the best in him and Mrs. Coulter, you know, believing he's a failure as a man.
A failure as a father. What has that man ever done for you? Like, she ain't, yo, listen, those words seemed really, really tough in that moment. But man, they keep ringing true as the story progresses, as it progresses on.
Yep. She summed him up pretty well. So back in our world, Will is still looking dodgy AF. Just looking dodgy. Like, just not looking like a normal kid. He keeps searching on his phone to see if there's any news about Thomas's death, and it doesn't appear that there is any.
I mean, yeah, he's definitely shook. Like, there's no question. Like, he needs a freaking demon to talk some sense to him. Like, what's happening inside his inner self is, like, he is off kilter. He's like, man, what do I do? You know, it's like that person that, like, puts something up on social media and keeps, like, refreshing to see if anybody liked it. You know what I mean? Like, just keep refreshing over and over again.
Why crazy. Are my mentions so empty?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, I feel for him because, especially towards the end of this episode, you realize what a different situation Will and Lyra are in. Will is a little bit older than Lyra, but he's seen so little compared to her. You know, yeah. I think Lyra would still maintain her cool, calm, collected persona because she's just been through so much, and she like she's a planner, she's a problem solver, like she know this is what she does. As she said, she causes chaos in the episode where she reunited with Roger, whereas Will is just like a normal teenager.
Yeah, and she also has self-awareness, right? She, even when they're putting her into the cutting machine, she says, you don't know who I am. Like, and she, like, knows that she's an aristocrat, the daughter of aristocrats. She knows that, like, that comes with a certain class standing. So she has kind of, like, a different even, like, take on her world, in her world, than Will would have in his, where he is, you know, my mom. So he doesn't have that same, oh, my dad is so whatever. He knows he looks up to his dad, but his mom has some mental health issues. He's from a, like, kind of lower class, you know, kind of situation, even though it's maintained, like, in the place where they live by his dad's money. He's not really, he doesn't have that same level of, I believe, self-esteem on that level that Lyra has. And overinflated self. I mean, Lyra is a little bit sometimes overly too confident, but I think Will is going to need to get a little bit more confident. You know what
absolutely.
I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Lyra is also, like a privileged brat in a lot of ways. Yeah,
I was trying to go overconfident, but I'm with you.
If we really think about it, like, Roger and Lyra too are from very different backgrounds.
Yeah.
And she's got a little privilege.
Yeah.
It's okay. Nothing against her, but it is what it is.
And she has a blind spot because of that privilege, because anyone who loves, like, that's what stood out to me is she got it when Adriel was saying it, but it never crossed her mind that, oh, maybe Adriel would try to do that using me or Roger, and who would be more likely? Roger, because he screamed that he didn't send for you and then calmed down when he saw Roger. Uh-huh. So in that moment, it would have made sense. Oh, we need to get out of here. Screw a sleepover. Screw a bath. Let's go. You know what I mean? Like, and it never crosses her mind because of that blind spot, because due to her standing, class, and privilege.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And she, you know, it's her dad. So she, I don't know. We'll get to all my poor Lyra moments, because I do actually feel for her so much at the end of this episode. But yeah, she definitely has some blind spots, especially when it comes to Azrael. She has a much harsher view of her mother than she does of her father, for understandable reasons.
Yeah.
So, back in Lyra's world, we're near the Aurora, and Azrael and Roger have arrived at their destination. The bears and Lyra are in pursuit, but Azrael has, like, a pretty decent head start. We have to assume that he left several hours before Lyra even woke up. Yep. The Magisterium forces appear, which was just, like, awesomely shot. Like, it was a beautiful scene. And they open fire on the bears immediately. Mrs. Coulter tells them that it's okay. Which I just was like, these people are so vicious. These bears don't have guns. Like, what? Like, I don't... What?
Yeah, and they tried to justify it by saying that the bears were in attack formation. But I don't know how they would attack them in the sky.
So, exactly. Like, exactly. You know? This was a really... The Magisterium had such an upper hand that they could have... They could have attempted to fight the bears in a totally different way. They have just, like... such an incredible advantage. And this battle that happens is a little bit confusing. There were points where I was like, I have no idea who's winning. It seems like the bears are definitely losing. But Yorick, through the whole battle, finds Lyra and takes her to the mountain.
Yeah. And that was, I mean, Yorick has really shown up as a friend, as an ally. He just loves Lyra. And I mean, even when he comes out, like, you know, when she calls him, he's like, you know, or like Lyra, like, what do you need? Like, he's so, Yorick's just the best, man.
Yeah, he really is. And if you think about all of the allies that Lyra has picked up, Yorick is the one ally that is doing all of this purely for Lyra. You know, like, Lee has this charge from the witches that he needs to help her. The Egyptians are looking for the missing children. The witches know that there's something, there's this prophecy, and that they see the big picture where everyone else is only seeing their picture. Yorick is just like, I'm here for Lyra. Like, this is my girl. She helped me get my crown back. I'm her ride or die.
I agree, and it's a great quality in him. He really does, you know, like, he really does, like, ooze nobility. The way that he, like, he has a code, you know what I mean? A man must have a code, as my guy from Game of Thrones said, you know? Like, so Sandor Clegane bringing him back, yes. But the reality of it is there's a scene, this scene loses something for me because of one missing element. It was greatly shot. The reason why I think they would have opened fire on the bears, and I wondered whether they cut this, is in the actual original source material, it's not just the bears and the Magisterium fighting. It's the bears, the Magisterium, and the witches. And by the time Mrs. Coulter shows up, the witches that were sided with the Magisterium are also with her, and Serafina Pecola has to come into the fight. So it would have made sense that there would have been air attacks and ground attacks why the Magisterium would have opened fire. And I just wondered why they didn't, you know, for all we gave them credit for about, you know, wow, they really showed up, Game of Thrones, as far as the CGI budget when it came to, like, the bear and all the things that, like, you could do with, like, talking animals. And this is a place where I think, you know, it probably was cost prohibitive because there's no reason why the witches should not be in this fight.
Yeah, they definitely sidelined the witches. I think that both the witches and the demons took a hit so that we could have a beautiful Yorick.
Uh-huh.
And so that we could have the fight between Yorick and Yopher. Like, I think they definitely had to sideline the witches for that. And I hate that stuff because it does bring you to the meta conversation. And I don't really... We're having this meta conversation in part because we're recording a podcast, but we would be having it anyway.
Yeah.
Like, there are just a lot of times in the last few episodes, especially, where we've been like, why did this happen? It doesn't make sense. And I read the book too, but I read it, I don't know, many, like several years ago. So I don't remember every detail, but there's been multiple times where I've been like, I don't understand why this is happening. The motivations of the characters are not clear. And it's all been around logistical stuff like this. Why would they open fire on these? These bears could not touch them. They were in an airship.
Yeah.
And but it was... I will say this. It did make the Magisterium and Mrs. Coulter just look totally brutal. Like, my initial reaction was, this is pure evil. Like, these bears can't do anything to you right now. It was a preemptive strike. And so it totally looked like they were definitely more brutal than I think the Magisterium even is and seemed to me in the books.
Yeah, I agree. It shows them as more brutal. The Magisterium, honestly, is represented to me in the source material as more, they get more personality in the TV show, but it's really more represented by Mrs. Coulter. She embodies like what they stand for and who they are. And in that, and I think this all began with Bolfanger. And it's the reason why I've been emphasizing it is to have Serafina Pecola be the only witch to show up, to have Lee just decide that he was going to take her further north versus the witches pulling his air balloon because they needed to escape. All of these, because they keep saying the witches plural in the show, but we only have seen one witch. We haven't seen witches yet. You know what I mean? So it's really something that I think like is a lost opportunity because those things that are making us question why are the very things that we're talking about. The time when Lyra falls out of the balloon into like no snow, we're like, why did that happen? Well, in the scene in the source material, there is a fight between the witches and those things that show up to attack them, and the balloon tips over low to the ground. So all of the missing, it's like, you know, they've airbrushed out and kind of sidelined a major component of the war. And I don't know how they're going to bring back in this war that's happening among the Witch Kingdom in the next season. But they need to, because this is central to like what's going to move the story forward.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
So let's go to the next section. So Roger and Adriel can see this battle that we were talking about. Roger wants to go find Lyra, but Adriel grabs him as Stelmaria subdues his demon. They are put into a cutting machine, into a cage. Lyra and Yorick arrive at a bridge too narrow for Yorick to cross, and they say their goodbyes in a very heartfelt way.
Yeah, this was, I was like, no. So cute. It was so moving. Part of me was like, y'all don't have time for this. But also the other part of me was like, oh, say goodbye.
Yeah. She has to honor like how much he just, like you said, been a ride or die. Like just anything she needed. He has kept his oath and some, you know. And, you know, so basically, Yorick is too heavy for the bridge, so they thank each other and Pan coaches Lyra as she crosses the bridge. She almost catches a bad one, like literally, she slips. Like,
but yet again, Pan is like, "We can do this." Like, just for a reminder that the demons play such an important role in keeping people motivated and focused. Like, Pan is like, just you know, keep going. We can do this. Like, he's leading the way. I really liked that. Like, it was a very small moment, but I was like, ah, yes. This is like when Hester was cheering on Lee during the fight. even though she was throwing lots of subs, she was also cheering him on. So yeah. I really liked this.
No, it was good. It was definitely good. So basically at this point, Roger has figured out what the heck is going on. He saw the cutting machine and all of that at Bolvanger. So he's figuring out what's happening here, and he starts pleading with Adriel. And Adriel's response is, in war there are casualties. And believe me when I tell you, this is a war, and one that will free humanity forever. More on that later. Lyra starts to scale the mountain, and Pan... Finally, my dude, you turn into something that is useful, a bird.
But Lyra had to tell him, like, bruh, you can see. can you do something helpful here? Like, can you turn so that we can see what's ahead of us? It was great.
Yeah, it was super good. I was so happy to see him do it. Like, he's like, yeah, like, oh, yeah, that's right. I can change into something else. All right, cool. So then Lyra arrives to the cutting machine just as Asriel has lowered the blade. Roger is killed by Intercision, and Cecilia disappears as well. Let's take a minute, a big minute, pause for reflection, and pour one out for our boy, Roger.
Egyptian boy, Billy Costa. He's missing.
Some people are saying there's a man with bright eyes. Others say it's a singing man with a fox demon. It's got to be the gobblers.
The gobblers? I've told you, the gobblers are a myth, Roger. They don't exist. The Egyptians will find Billy.
Fine. But don't blame me when I get to say I told you so.
She's better than you think she is! She's special!
Billy?
Roger! Billy Costa!
I don't have a more to miss. My aunt brought me up for a bit. And then she found a good job for me. In Jordan College. And then I met Lyra. I know she won't leave us here. She'll be looking for us right now. Wherever she is.
Dear Lyra, you must be wondering where I am.
We're about to go on a trip.
All the way to the north. To a place called the station.
Station.
You'd be surprised who's taking us. But I hope you know that I'd never want to go on an adventure without you. I miss you.
All my love. Roger.
I know they've separated you all from your demons, but you've still got a choice. Do something, or do nothing. Do something and we can make them pay for what they did to you. Do nothing, and all your demons will know is that hurt of that final moment. Is that really what you want? We've got to stop this happening again.
I mean, I'm not like you. Would never have chosen to leave Jordan.
I know.
But now here we both are, halfway around the world. And I'm here because of you. And you're here because of me.
Because we changed each other's lives. I like the fact you changed my life.
Can't promise I won't stop changing it.
Please don't do this!
Was not ready. I knew this was coming. I was actually kind of hoping that since we already had our hearts broken by Billy dying, which did not happen in the book, that Roger would maybe somehow be cut, because we need that, but survive. This was really, really rough. Really, I could not. If anybody was following along, I was live tweeting and I wasn't ready.
Yeah, no, I don't think I was either. It's one of the reasons I was like, I wasn't big on watching this episode before it started. And I knew, you know, I wanted to watch it. I wanted to see it. But this part was the part in the pit of my... when I read this in the books, I was just screaming the whole way. I was like, no! Like, I'm literally reading the words and, like, internally, like, cringing that this is going to happen. So when we lost Billy early in the season, I thought, man, they are just really laying it on thick, because they didn't have to kill Billy. Like, and they could have went with the book version versus the movie version, and just kept Billy alive. And then this would have had, probably would have been just as bad, but the impact of losing them both. Like, we start out in search of both of these kids. Yes, the other kids, but these two kids were the focal point. And then you realize that we lost them both.
Like, yeah.
So, tough stuff. So the energy blows Lyra back and creates a portal between worlds. Just as Azrael is about to cross into this portal, Mrs. Coulter arrives.
Locked and loaded. That's why she had the gun.
I'm going to bust me a cap in somebody's ass today. I can see it coming. It's happening. So, you know, she was ready. She's ready to get at him. And Azrael tries to convince her to come with him. You see that light? You feel that warmth? It's the sun from another world. For a moment, it looks like she is considering going along. He speaks of a far more dangerous power that he's trying to take down. Help me create a new republic of heaven, he says. The two of them kiss, and he says to her that they can take the universe apart and put it back together. He still loves her, and Mrs. Coulter says she cannot go. She thinks about it, but doesn't want to go ultimately, and says something I thought was really touching. They have a child, and that child is in this world. She wants to stay. And this guy, Azrael, once again, you want her? Yes, I want her. More than anything that I can have. Good look by Mrs. Coulter.
Azrael's such an asshole. He seems to make Mrs. Coulter seem like a good person here.
Yeah.
I actually felt really bad for Mrs. Coulter, and I was having like a heartwarming moment. I was like, oh, she really loves Lyra. She's going to stay.
Yeah.
Azrael, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, there's not much left to say. I mean, we have beat this drum, and you know, listen, the real hero here is the master. He tried to off his ass early on. He was like, let me get him out of here because this guy is trouble. And he's not wrong. He's not wrong so far, you know? So maybe there'll be some things that he does season two that starts to redeem him in some ways. But so far, he is not batting a very high batting average. So Azrael does cross without Mrs. Coulter with Stamario. Meanwhile, in our world, Will has arrived at the park where Boreal crosses between worlds over and over again using that portal. Lyra wakes up because she was knocked out from the blast. There was a huge blast when Roger's demon was cut from him. And she realizes what has happened. Just as Mrs. Coulter and the Golden Monkey see Roger's body, Lyra hides from her mother. Lyra comes out when Mrs. Coulter has left, and holds Roger's body and says her goodbyes in very moving scene. She's talking. She can't believe what's happened. Pan tries to comfort her, but she's inconsolable. Pan encourages her to go in search of dust. Lyra is worried that they will be alone, and Pan says what I think we've all kind of felt. We've always been alone, apart from Roger. And Lyra is convinced with that line. She looks at Roger, and she talks to him and tells him that she's going to cross into this other world. Lyra crosses into the other world just as she does this. Will also finds the portal between worlds and crosses as well.
What a beautiful ending sequence. I just thought there was so much power packed in the last 5 minutes of this episode. I mean, what Will is doing is important to the story, but it wasn't, to me, it didn't have the same emotional bent. And I had a bunch of questions about it, which we can get to in a moment. But the emotional weight of Mrs. Coulter seeing Roger's body, something that she has been sheltered from. You know, all these kids have died during Intercision, and she hasn't really been part of that. She's had people doing that for her. And then also, again, Ruth Wilson should get all the nominations for this performance, because you can see that it's registering on her face that she failed Lyra again, that this, she knows that Roger is Lyra's friend and only companion. And the look on her face when she passes him is not one of indifference, which is what we've come to expect from her when these situations arise, but it's one where she's really taking it in. I think she's realizing the consequences of her own actions. Not to say she's going to change. Wouldn't put my money on that. But she definitely is feeling the loss that her daughter is feeling. And Lyra talking to Roger and Pan saying that line about how they've always been alone. At first, I really had a problem with that line because I'm here like, wait a second. You're not alone. You know, you had the Egyptians and you had Yurik and Lee and all these people who joined your cause. But it comes back to what Roger was saying, like on a deeper level, they've always been alone.
Yeah.
That their bond has always been that it's just them, that there's no parents, there's no one to take care of, there's no one to count on. And so this was, I had so much, I was wrecked. Okay. I'm just going to admit it. Yeah. I was wrecked.
Yeah.
I was a sobbing mess. I think they cleaned up a lot of the ending of this story, the book, because I recall thinking that I didn't think that Lyra's reaction to Roger's death is impactful to me when in the book. And this is, she's absolutely, there's no doubt that she's devastated.
100%. That was the big cleanup. I think the cleanup of Mrs. Coulter choosing to stay because she doesn't know Lyra's going to cross. She still wants to try to figure out how she can win back her daughter because she's missed all those years. And Lyra's response to Roger's death and her being part of what brought him there to that end is so much deeper than in the way Pullman ends the story in the book. Because when I was done reading book one, I was like, I'm done with all three of this family. This whole family can go through that portal and I'd be good. Like, just go. Just everybody go. And it's totally different in the show. I was like, oh, wait, okay. Like, I kind of get why people are having their reactions. And I agree with everything you just said. Mrs. Coulter is feeling like she let Lyra down. I think both those things can exist inside of her. Her passion for getting rid of what she feels is like original sin, and also her passion for her love for her daughter. Because I think ultimately, even though we can acknowledge as an audience that it's twisted, in her mind, she is like, we've talked about her self-loathing. We've talked about her not being happy with herself, about what it would have felt like to be shamed by a whole world by making a decision that you made the organization that runs the world. And inside of herself, she probably feels like dust, and these feelings that are natural feelings, her love for Asriel, is part of the reason. So if she can take that away from the children, she may feel like she's going to save them from the same suffering that she's endured in her life. Misguided as it is, it's coming from a good place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, Asriel also is coming from a place of wanting to free human beings from the suffering that is caused by the Magisterium's hold over them, making them feel bad. Like, in a way, he wants to free people in similarly, but not necessarily from sin, from the consequences of having your natural feelings and human behavior treated as if it's something evil and terrible. I think this episode did the best job that we've seen so far in this show of presenting the conflict that is the complexity that mm-hmm. these characters are experiencing.
Agreed. I agree. I agree with that. And I thought it was, it was well done. The ending scene literally, I was watching it with my fiance. We were watching the show. She didn't read any of the material. She's only watched the shows. And she was like livid when Roger was gone. I mean, she had a visceral response. And I was like, okay, like to see somebody who hasn't read the books, who didn't know what was coming, to have the response that she had because of watching it. She was like really broken up, and I was really broken up, and I knew it was coming, but I can only imagine for people who were only watching the shows how it felt to just finally come to the realization, oh my God, we're gonna lose Roger too. So it was, and then the Lyra's response, and I mean that scene where Lyra's just talking to him as if he's still with us was strong. It was really well done. So.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as I said, the last 5 minutes are the most powerful, I think, period, in the show. Like, I would argue that there's a lot of problems that they created for themselves by leaving things out. And I would say most of that came from everything that happened after they start heading north. A lot of those mistakes were, you know, errors that they introduced themselves. But I still felt like this had such a beautiful emotional impact that I don't care. I still think they landed the finale in part because this was really beautiful. Yep. It was sad, but it was beautiful.
And good on them. I think it was a wise choice. Now that we could talk about it. We're at the end of season one, and I think it was a wise choice for them to go right into shooting season two. We know we're going to get season two this year. We're in a new year. And that's really great because, like, I think where they left it really open. Where is Will going? Where is Lyra going? What is this knife that Boreal is talking about? What is the Tower of Angels? Like, what's happening there? There's a lot of things that are, you know, where's Azrael going, really? Like, are they all going the same place? Are they going different places? What's happening with this? And I'm excited to see that.
Yeah, me too. And I think that they did a good job of leaving enough of mystery and setting up I think it was smart to introduce the tower of the angels, like, in dialogue now.
Yeah.
And the knife, I think that was smart because I was watching the finale and tweeting about it. And I was also sort of seeing what people were saying. And a lot of people were like, wait, that's how it ends? Like, I need to know what happens next. Like, where are they going? So I'm excited for season two for sure.
Yeah. I thought they were going to, I truthfully, and we talked about this, I thought they were going to get us to the point where they got to where they were going, then stop it. So I was surprised that they stopped it where they stopped it also, but I get why they did. It kind of, you know, leaves you on edge, especially when they start talking about some of the things they were talking about. And the second book, it's no surprise, if you look up, is called The Subtle Knife. So we know that this knife has some significance that they brought up in this last episode. It's just what that significance will be for show watchers or book readers. You got time now. You can catch up. You can read both books or all three. And I would think that after watching the show, it may behoove all of us to have, like, all three done because they introduced things from book two, like, super liberally in this one. So I think it's a really good, probably good choice.
I haven't read book four, but my understanding is the opening scene from this season was from book four. So they're clearly not purist when it comes to making sure that people can catch up. So, I'm definitely going to read the third book before. Actually, I may go back and reread the second book, which it's also been a really long time since I read that one before the next season drops because I'm curious. I'm really, really looking forward to where they take it so far. I think that the end of this season, to me, this season is kind of cut in half. I think that the first 2-3 episodes were really strong, and then things started to kind of fall apart in terms of, like, how the story was coming together around episode 4, episode 5. They started to sort of admit things that had me asking more questions, like trying to figure out the how of things, which, as I've said several times, is never a good look. But in general, I really like how they did this. I'm probably going to give it some space and rewatch it in kind of like a binge.
Mm-hmm.
Because also week to week, you have so much more time to sit around and process and think about plot holes and like,
yep.
And because we are, our meta conversation is that we watch this episode 3 to 4 times before we podcast. And so of course, when you look at a work that way, each time you're going to notice flaws you didn't notice before.
Yeah.
So I'm willing to say that part of my struggles in the second half of the season were probably because we're looking at it, we're scrutinizing the work in a certain way. I think overall, despite that, overall, I really enjoyed this show. I'm glad this is the first show that we picked to do. This has been really fun, and it's a really interesting world. It's a world that's enough like ours that I don't feel like I need every little detail explained to me, but it's different enough that it's still interesting. Where I think the show could have done better in terms of world building was mostly around the demons. They elected to do show not tell so much that I think that a lot of the connection between demons in the first half of this series was super confusing to people. And then in the second half, it was like, they mostly did pretty big things to tell us how important the demons were, which was mostly removing them from people. And I don't know. I felt like they could have, there was a more artful, graceful way to do that. But at this point, that's kind of like a dead horse that we're beating. Like it is what it is. But I love the overall arc of the story. I would have liked some of the battles to be a little bit better fleshed out, but you almost always have that. That's like a constant problem in fantasy stories, that when you're writing a book, you can write these big battle scenes because they're free. Yep. Like, it don't cost anything to write out a big battle scene. It's just a big battle scene. But when you're filming it, you have to think about hiring extras and costume and makeup and choreography and CGI and all these things that make it a little bit more complicated. So I wish they had been done differently, but I also understand why they haven't been.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And I think I really enjoyed it as well. I'm super glad that we decided to do this as our first season. And I love the world. I love the character. I know that some people may think, man, where does this go? But just as being a person who's, you know, read the next book, this story gets so, if they stay true to that, this story gets so much better than even, I thought I was like, man, I really like The Golden Compass. And then I read The Subtle Knife and I was like, oh my gosh, like, I love this story now. Like, it's so, the world gets more complex, it gets deeper. And I think like we're going to have a great journey in season two. So,
The Subtle Knife is my favorite. I really love that book.
Yeah. So do you think, like, just before we move on, do you think the Master spoke about the betrayal and that she had to like betray someone and she didn't know. She didn't even know that if she was going to be the one betraying. Do you think we've seen that point, or we're still on that journey where this prophecy is still playing out?
I think the prophecy is still playing out. I think there's a way to read it that betrayal could have been Roger. I think there's other ways to read it too, that betrayal was to her father. I think we're still in for a major betrayal.
Yeah. Yep. So we shall see. Anything else you want to talk about this season? We talked about what we like, what we question, and what we want to see more of, without even really prefacing it. But anything else you want to talk before we wrap up this season?
No, I'm really glad we picked this first. This was such a well done show. I know it had problems. I agree with all the folks out there who said that it had issues, but I think that overall I was really impressed with the quality. I wasn't expecting it to be this good, to be honest. So it proved to me that when HBO puts their mind to it, they can still greenlight kind of ambitious projects. This, to me, this is to do this story, which is a little obscure in America these days, and to do this collaboration with BBC, I'm impressed that this got greenlit and put on HBO, and not just like as something that was aired in England and then picked up by HBO later, which is they've done before, where a show airs earlier in the UK and then it does really well there, and one of the cable networks picks it up for American viewers. This was the same way that like some of the really big collaborations between the English and American broadcasting companies have been rolled out. Like almost everything that that Masterpiece, PBS and BBC or ITV had collaborated with is done the same way, where it airs in the UK on Sunday night or on Saturday, and then it airs in the US the next day. Sometimes there's like a gap, a 6-week gap or whatever between they aired in the fall in the UK and then they air it in the spring. But the fact that this was like just a 1-day turnaround showed that HBO had the confidence that this was going to be a good show. And I'm impressed. I'm surprised. I didn't think it was going to be, I wasn't expecting it to be such a well done show, out the gate. So I'm glad we did.
I'm glad we did too. And I have enjoyed getting to do this with you, especially. It has been great because like we talk about this all the time, but it's, you know, it's a great thing. You collaborate with someone that you love and care about, and that the stories are dear to you, and stories in general are dear to us. So I'm so happy that I'm getting to do this and continuing to do this with you, and that we have completed, you know, this first season.
Yes, me too. This has been fun. I mean, we would be talking about this regardless.
Yeah, I know. No, it's true. It's so true. But
yeah, it's been fun to do this as like a, to have this space to talk about it and to do it as a project, and to bring in other people in that conversation. Our listeners are a small and mighty bunch.
Yes, they are. And great. I love it. And such great feedback and messages. And they send us things that they're thinking about. And we appreciate also your patience with the holidays, and hope you guys have started out your new year really well and healthy and happy, and wishing you guys all the best for the rest of this year as we get ready for our next one.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you to everyone who has downloaded, left a review, subscribe. You're the best.
Yes, and a big announcement coming on our next season. What we're going to cover. We are going to make that announcement shortly so that you guys know what we're going to be doing, and we will not be gone long. We will be back pretty soon with a new season covering a different show. We look forward to making that announcement.
Yeah, we're not going to go away too long, so stay subscribed to the podcast. Do not remove it from your regular feed. We're just going to take a couple weeks to regroup, do some research, and we'll be back in your earbuds in a few weeks.
Sounds good. All right, have a good one.
Thank you.